Please close your eyes and concentrate with every thought you think upon the recitation we're about to say.
Little special music.
Interplanetary, most extraordinary craft. Calling occupants of interplanetary craft.
Okay, and there's our intro for Dr. Raymond Keller back tonight. Hello, Ray. There you go.
Hello.
You wanted that on to open the discussion tonight. Our conversation begins with a little unusual music. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes, Jeff. That was by the Carpenters, and it was from 1977. It was, I think, made it up to number 9 on the hit list at the time. was originally performed by a group called Klaatu, named after the robot.
Oh, yeah.
On The Day the Earth Stood Still, the 1951 movie. And it very well embodies the peaceful intentions of the Venusians and other extraterrestrials in our star sector.
You know, it's interesting, the time since that song was popped, 41 years? Wow. 1977, you said, I think.
Yes. And that was, interestingly, that's the same year that Close Encounters of the Third Kind came out, the movie.
Yeah. When the Carpenters were, a lot of younger people now don't even know who they were, but they were very talented people, calling occupants of interplanetary, extraordinary craft.
Yes, yes.
There you go.
And that was the first attempt at establishing a World Contact Day, which was set on the 1st of March. And my group that I had in California, OSIRIS, the Outer Space International Research and Investigation Society, took a cue from ESTARA and Air Lynn Cheney and some others, and moved it to the 20th of November, because that was the day that George Adamski encountered Orthon on the Mojave Desert.
Interesting. Very interesting times. And think, over 40 years since that came out. All right, so Dr. Ray Keller is the author of three remarkable books on Venus and Venusians and visitors and Val Thor. And you've got another book coming out, I guess, at some point.
Yes, I do. I'm working on it now, and I'm collecting the material and doing some research as I travel to different locations in the process of doing presentations about the first three books.
Very good. We want to talk about tonight a number of things. There's a link. There are two links under Dr. Ray Keller in guests, and we have Giant Rock, George Van Tassel, and the Integratron. We have photos of all of that. Then we have another one, Venusian spaceships are landing. There's another link. So what do you want to do first, Ray?
Well, I have a special message, and it's directed to you, Mr. Rentz, and all of the listeners of your program. And I think Frank has downloaded it.
Yeah, I've got it here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, tell us who it is. Woman has an indeterminate, almost sounds like an Eastern European accent of some kind. I don't know what it would be, but who is this we're going to hear?
Yes, this is Lady Orda, the woman known on Earth to most people as Dolores Barrios.
What is that again? Dolores Barrios? All right.
Yes, she's the one who dematerialized with her friends on the 8th of August, 1954, on the western side of the parking lot at the Skyline Lodge on where Mount Palomar Observatory is.
Okay. And she is of what origin? What do we think?
Yes. She's from the Iberian Peninsula originally.
Spanish. Okay.
Yes. And of Basque origin in the Pyrenees Mountains,
Basques.
Region between, yes, between
the strange
Spain
lost
and,
people.
Yes. And she's lived in many countries and speaks many languages, and there are Venusian safe houses, naturally, to protect their identity when they're operating here on the Earth, in many countries. And she spent a considerable amount of time in Brazil, and so taken up Brazilian accent.
Well, who is she? What is the purpose of her being on the program tonight in this recorded message?
She is the queen of the planet Venus.
Self-appointed?
No. She is selected to be the queen.
So is she Venusian in her original origin?
In her original origin before any incarnations on Earth, yes.
Oh, okay. All right. You want me to play this now? What's the schedule?
Yes. All right.
So this is, give us a little intro to it. What are we going to hear? And this is Lady Orta?
Lady Orta. And this
O-R-D-A.
Is her St. Valentine's Day message to the inhabitants of Earth.
All right. Well, let's listen. Here we go.
Dear friends of Venus, the solar hierarchy of light of your sister planet Abihar extends joyous greetings to the inhabitants of the Earth. This is Queen Orta of Abihar speaking to you on a recorded message delivered to our emissary, the incarnation of Publius Virgilius Maru, the one commonly known amongst you as the Cosmic Ray, Dr. Raymond Keller, the author of the Venus Rising trilogy of books, on Sunday, 10th February 2018. You should be receiving this message on the night of Valentine's Day, Wednesday, 14th February 2018, over Rains Radio. Our love and thanks are also extended to our cosmic brothers Jeff Ramsey, Frank Chile, and all the other brothers and sisters working diligently behind the scenes at Rains Radio, bringing to the public's attention the truth that is out there, the truth about intelligent life forms filling the immensity of space and their visitations to Earth in the Ventus, Beamships, SOAPs, Merkabas, and other ethereal star vessels that your military and political authorities have erroneously referred to as unidentified flying objects. The planet Abihar, or Venus as you know it, represents the highest manifestation of love and peace in the solar system. Your ancestors from the remote past recognized our world as the celestial sign for the goddess of love and beauty, as well as the herald of peace and understanding. On this night of Saint Valentine, it is duly recognized by the solar hierarchy of light emplaced on Abihar that a message of love and peace is exactly what your world's perplexed inhabitants require at this time, for the purposes of securing their own mutual development and bringing about the long prophesied Aquarian Age of Enlightenment and universal understanding. It saddens us that your governments and religions so burden you with endless laws and ordinances, completely ignoring the sound advice of the Master Teacher Jesus the Christ, sent among you 2 millennia ago, who taught the simple principle of unfailing kindness in love for the infinite Creator, as expressed and manifested through love for your own divine essence in the embodiment of the celestial spark that indwells and permeates all of your neighbors. Remember that the angels of the celestial worlds, and particularly of Abihar, and the other planets of our solar system, both seen and unseen, forever attend you. As the human being is well motivated by love, our advice is to continue to manifest kindness and good works, for you never know when you shall find yourself in our presence. Your manifestations of love will garner you the prize of life, both happy and eternal. This is how we shall build a new earth and, in turn, bid you entrance to the glories of Abihar and other orbs in the Pleroma. We, along with our brothers Cosmic Ray and Frank Chile, as well as our sisters Omnek Onek and Cherry Lynn, look forward to meeting you on the slopes of Mount Shasta on the 27th through 29th of July for the From Venus with Love World Conference. Our blessings are transmitted to you and yours on multidimensional planes for a happy Valentine's Day. Keep love in your heart every day so that each and every one becomes a special Valentine's celebration. I regret that I cannot speak to you live at this time, as I am conducting an important mission in the Saturnian system. This is the Queen, Order of Abelhar. Dear friends of Venus.
I just wanted you to hear the beginning. That's how it started out, and we missed it. Dear friends of Venus. All right, well, that's a very nice Valentine's Day greeting and message. Very positive. Words to the wise, and well, it was very nice, right? You always do very unusual things here.
Oh, well, I thought that that song was a very good introduction to that message.
Oh, it was.
They just kind of blended right into each other.
I agree. And indeed, happy Valentine's Day to everyone listening, and even all those who aren't listening. So there. Very good, Ray. We have a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to go through the giant rock saga to a degree, and the story about how giant rocks split is eerie in and of itself, so don't forget about that. We'll get to that later on, Ray. What else do we want to do by way of a prelude background? We've covered a lot of ground in the past programs. What have you to say about any areas that we didn't hit hard enough, cover extensively enough? Did we miss anything back there before we go ahead?
Well, we didn't talk about Erlyn Cheney. We didn't have enough time for that. But
okay.
I think that the song pretty well set the stage for that, because she was the one that was a... an intimate acquaintance with George Adamski. And
now, who is this,
and,
please?
This is the photos that that we put up with Valiant Thor scout craft over the pyramid.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And she was inside the pyramid at that time in 1981 on the 29th anniversary of Adamski's encounter. And attempting to communicate with higher dimension. And her photographer was outside there, and was driven by a guide, an Egyptian guide, some distance away, so that photographs could be taken of the scout craft. So that, mm-hmm. that's what mm-hmm. was published on your site of the last time.
Very good. Yes, of course, we saw them. The Carpenters, calling occupants of interplanetary craft. Very interesting. That was a single in 1977. I guess they still were making 45s back then.
Yes, they were. They may have just gotten into tape decks. I think they had 8 tracks.
Well, the 8-track would have been actually in the 50s, but cassette tapes came out first. Would have been the late or early 60s, but they didn't really take off and get hot until the 70s. But you're on the right timeline there. Okay.
So now, it is a beautiful song, and
yeah, very nice.
And it emphasizes the more benevolent aliens that are out there. Not to say that there aren't any bad ones. Of course, the universe is a big place, and there are. But the bad ones up to that time, and well, even up to our time, seem to be getting the majority of press attention.
Well, bad news sells, Ray.
Good news.
Good news doesn't sell.
If it bleeds, it leads.
That's it. You got it. Okay, let's pull up the link right below Ray Keller's name. If you look and guess on the left side, there's a big, this is giant rock, George Van Tassel. It says Van Tassel. Anyway, pull that up, and there's a whole long string of things we're going to walk through here and look at. First up is an LA Times news clipping, August 10, 1960. This is still back in the time. Oh, Jack Smith wrote this. Interesting. This is still back in the day when UFOs were routinely reported on, not necessarily by the Times, but by thousands of newspapers across the country, back when the business was regulated. And you couldn't go into a city and buy up all the media like they can now. That's why only six corporations run about 95% of the media. It used to be that a town would have a dozen radio stations, maybe 8 or 10 of them would be owned by different people, depending on the town. That isn't the way it is anymore. But anyhow, here's a Los Angeles Times, August 10, 1960 article. Flying Saucer Man Runs for President. And the subtitle is Selected by Outer Space by Jack Smith, who was a very famous L.A. Times writer for many years. And his name is Gabriel Green, a 35-year-old bachelor from Whittier. He tossed his hat into the ring yesterday for President of the United States on the Flying Saucer ticket. You gotta love it. You gotta love it.
And the thing is, he actually got about 171,000 votes.
No kidding.
From California. And he got a thank you letter from Bob, not Bobby. Oh, yeah, he got a thank you letter later from Bobby Kennedy to thank him for, because it's believed that most of the votes that he siphoned off were from Nixon. Of course, both Nixon and Gabriel Green were from Whittier.
Yes, they were. That's where the
Whittier,
Nixon
California.
Library is located, I think.
Yes, yes, it's that's where it's located. And he was a physicist. He attended UC Berkeley.
And, Gabriel Green was a physicist.
Yes, yes, he was a physicist, and he made many important discoveries, and they're outlined in my third book, Excellent Venus Adventure. He was in communication with many physicists from around the world, including at the Brookline in New York.
Uh-huh.
And the Gran Sasso in Italy, working with subatomic particle research
Wow, no slouch, a real top-level scientist. UC Berkeley, oh, physicist, wow.
Yes, and he was fascinated with unidentified flying objects and research in ufology because mm-hmm. he had been contacted by beings from the Alpha Proxima Centauri system.
Very good. All right, we have to pause for just a couple of minutes. Ray, we'll come right back with more as we take a look at these issues and oddities from Dr. Raymond Keller's Van Tassel Files, coming up next. Cosmic Ray, as a lot of people call him, and we're looking at the first link under Ray's name if you just tuned in. If you open that up, it might take a few seconds to fill up. Here's his story from the Times. I'll read it to you for those of you who are not online or able to see it otherwise. Gabriel Green, a 35-year-old bachelor from Whittier. I think they say physicist or something. Is it bachelor? What does that got to do with anything? Threw his hat into the ring yesterday for President of the United States on the Flying Saucer ticket. You gotta love it, as I said. At a press conference in the Biltmore, Green announced that he had been selected by people from outer space. This is a physicist from Berkeley, suggesting, obviously, contact. He said his advisors were from the Alpha Centauri system, and they looked like people. Green admitted he doesn't expect to beat Vice President Nixon or Senator Kennedy, but he does believe he can carry Whittier if he gets enough publicity. He said the space people could overpower the Earth in a few hours, but they don't operate that way. They want us to believe in them first, he said, so they can teach us peace and economic security under universal law. They could completely take over this planet between breakfast and lunch any day of the year, he warned, but that would be in violation of their principles. Interesting. And this guy, just, it's amazing. He's a Berkeley physicist. Green said he has seen at least 75 flying saucers from space, the last contact being only 3 months ago. I've seen them with my own eyes, he said. And contrary to popular opinion, he said, spacemen are not new to this planet, but have been interfering all along. They are more advanced than we are, mentally, spiritually, and scientifically, he said. Green said he doesn't expect to be believed because skepticism is the general attitude of this particular race. They didn't believe the world was round, he said. They didn't believe we could crack the sound barrier, and we cracked it. The reporters wouldn't even report the Wright brothers' early flights, which is true. Green was asked by someone why he didn't have a Martian or a man from Venus at the press conference to help prove his claims. He said, what would be the use? If he said he was from outer space, nobody would believe him. Mm-hmm. All true. Green was, he might have said also, how do you know they aren't here? Green was wearing a spectacular set of red socks. Green was wearing red. Okay. Did you get those from outer space, he was asked? Nope. I bought these right here in Los Angeles. The presidential candidate said the women in space are beautiful. One of my friends made a contact with one of them not long ago, he said. He said she was really out of this world. Now, this is written by Jack Smith, a very serious writer in the LA Times Bureau for years and years, decades, many decades. So interesting. I didn't know about this. And you say he pulled 150,000 or something like that votes in the state of California?
Yes, I think it was 171,000, if I'm correct.
That's more than I'd get. Wow. That's
and,
neat.
It was a write-in, too.
Oh, he wasn't official even on the ballot, a write-in. That means the media played volleyball with him for fun, and yet word got out, and people were so disgusted, I guess, with the choices they had, they voted for him.
Yes, they saw the difference between Republicans and Democrats, like the difference between two nickels and a dime.
There you go. Very well said. All right, well, whatever became of Dr. Green, do we know?
He passed away in 2009, I believe.
Would have been fun to have him on. Would you classify him as a serious contactee, Ray?
Oh yes. He worked very closely in organizing the contactee community in California.
Uh-huh.
And was at all these conventions at Giant Rock, worked closely with Van Tassel, and his organization, the Amalgamated Flying Saucer Clubs of America, ultimately became the hub for contactee research from around the world, and he continued that work up until his passing.
Huh. Fascinating. Really interesting. In that a physicist of his caliber would hang out at Giant Rock speaks very highly of a lot of different things. All right, let's go on down to the next item on this page. We're right below Dr. Raymond Keller in Guests. Click on that first top link there. And this story is entitled, His Roof is a Rock. All right, tell us about Giant Rock. It was the biggest boulder in America, I think, the biggest observable one.
Yes, it's the largest freestanding boulder, or it was the largest freestanding boulder up until about February of the year 2000. when a third of it split off.
And on a very special day, too, we might add.
Oh, yeah, yes, yes. And, well, it's primarily made of brilliant white quartz. You can't tell it from looking at it from the outside, but because it is quartz, it has great capacitance. It has piezoelectric effect, so it can under pressure and heat for the millions of years that it's been sitting on the desert floor, it's been accumulating an electric charge. And because of that, it was believed by the Native Americans to be a channel to the rock people that they called the giant rock the Great Stone. And it was this channel or go-between for communications from beings in a higher but unseen realm. And this proved to be true also for George Van Tassel, who in 1952 began what we now call channeling. But he said it was opening up a cone of receptivity that was opened up over the earth in space over the directly over where the giant rock was located. And so he began to receive these communications initially from Ashtar, an entity known as Ashtar, patrolling the space sector between the Earth and Mars. And then later he had received a visitation from another entity from Venus known as Solgonda, who gave him the blueprints for building what became the Integratron.
Which we will look at shortly. Quick question. Back to the greeting that we heard, the recorded Valentine's greeting. Very nice. What did she call Venus? What's the alternate name?
Abahar.
Spell it. A-B-A-H-A-R? Abahar?
A-B-E-J-A-R.
Ah. Like Abe Jar. Okay.
Right. Abe Jar. And it's a word that signifies planet of the bees. And when we look at the mythology of various people, both ancient and modern, we see there are many connections between bees and Venus that are just really too many to list, but I go through many of them in my first book, Venus Rising, A Concise History of the Second Planet.
What is particularly interesting to me, and you look at this picture and then scroll down a little bit further and you'll see other pictures of it, and Van Tassel lived under the rock. All right? Now, I ask, how did Van Tassel come to own the rock? Do you remember anything about the ownership, the chain of title of this thing that he bought and hollowed out an area underneath for UFO meetings and everything? Tell us more.
Oh, yes. There was a prospector named Frank Kreitzer, and that's a picture of him on the article there under the rock. That article first appeared in 1940, and it comes from the Science magazine and Popular Science. And he was basically, I guess, what you would call a squatter.
Okay.
But he laid claim to the land, and he carved out a home and dynamited a home.
Oh, he was the one who blew out the underside for a living quarters. It wasn't Van Tassel.
Right. right. He was the first one to do it, and he had dreams of turning it into an airport, although he didn't have the technical expertise to do it. You can see at the top on the page, on the first page there, there's a windsock of one of the boulders. So he wanted to clear everything out there for a landing field for small aircraft, but he didn't have the technical expertise that Van Tassel did. Now, Van Tassel was from Barberton, Ohio, I believe. From Ohio. He was an air mechanic, and he came out to California in the early 1940s to work with Lockheed aircraft, and he was intrigued. He was intrigued by this property, and came to know of it after meeting Kreitzer, who was kind of down on his luck, and he fixed his car for free. He had an old car that was on its last legs, and he fixed it for free. I think he did $200 of repairs.
That's a lot of repair work back then.
Oh yes, and he also, and not only that, but he also gave Kreitzer a bag of $30 worth of groceries. Which can you imagine in the 1940s? How much?
Yeah, that's two shopping carts full, easy.
And so they became fast friends, and then
that's a picture of Kreitzer, by the way, the man standing in the room under giant rock. He's got a jacket on and an open collar shirt, and there's a dining table there, a little kitchen area. That's Frank Kreitzer, right?
Yes, that's him. And he had a skirmish with the police, and Kreitzer did, not Van Tassel. And he was shot in the melee.
What? At Giant Rock?
Yes. Frank Kreitzer was shot.
At Giant Rock?
Yes.
Wow.
It was believed that he was an enemy agent.
During the war?
Yes. And
because he was a loner.
To interview him, and allegedly he resisted arrest and was shot in the process.
Well, I don't, of course, believe those stories, and no witnesses except the cops. But he survived, obviously, and Van Tassel meets him. They become good friends. This lone prospector had blasted out this living quarters under this enormous boulder, which I still have some real questions about. That doesn't look like it ought to be there. Was that put there by somebody? What's the mythology say?
Well, the mythology is that it's been a sacred site for the Native Americans going back as long as anybody can possibly remember, and the Native Americans believe that it was holy ground. And that it was put there by, just dropped there by the sky gods.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a on the north side of the rock is an etching that looks like some kind of a scorpion that was there from, allegedly put there by an Indian chief, and the Native Americans told Van Tassel, what is that scorpion there? And the Indian chief said that it signifies that this is the good place.
There are several boulders there, not just one. They look completely out of place, like they were dropped there at some point, somehow. I don't see any other geography around there that looks anything like it. There may be, I'm just not seeing it. So take a look at that. I'm going to put up a story. I found a really neat story. It's called The Intrigue of Giant Rock by Barbara LaGrange. And I'm going to put that up under Ray's name here in just a minute. So we'll put this here. And, okay, so Van Tassel buys it from the loan prospector. When does the airport go in, and how did that work? We're looking at material from Dr. Keller's Van Tassel files, just so you know. Go ahead.
All right. Van Tassel's dream was to run an airport, and he believed that the location was prime, being on the outskirts of San Diego and Los Angeles, and midway between there and Las Vegas, Nevada, so that it would. He believed that he'd get a lot of traffic there, especially from private pilots and so forth. So
Excuse me. That in those days, if I'm correct, the road that goes to and past Giant Rock was the primary road that went to Las Vegas. That's before they put the big interstate in, and I think there was a lot of traffic there.
Yes, there was a lot of traffic there, and he had three grown daughters, so he brought them out with him from Ohio, and set up a cafe that his wife ran. I think it was called the, if I remember it, it was like Do Drop In or something like that. Or do come in, yeah. Do come in was the name.
Do drop in works too. That's good.
Yeah, do drop in would be just as well. And her specialty was baking pies and for truckers and everything. So they were doing pretty good. And then after Van Tassel started receiving these messages, and he began to hold meetings in his home under the rock, and various people there would begin to channel messages, and he would keep a log of these conversations with extraterrestrials. And then later on, they would publish a magazine called The Proceedings from the College of Universal Wisdom. And what they learned from these channeling sessions with the ETs would be published in the pages of that newsletter.
Hmm.
So what he essentially said was that there were strange electromagnetic forces that created a vortex near the rock.
Mm-hmm.
And this was confirmed by various measurements, and it drew scientists, UFO specialists, and tourists from all over the world. And then because of that, he came up with the idea of starting the first flying saucer convention, first mm-hmm. interplanetary spacecraft convention, which was held on the 4th of April of 1954. So today we see all these UFO conventions all around the world, but the first one to come up with the idea was George Van Tassel.
How interesting. Now, when I put this story up in a few minutes, The Intrigue of Giant Rock, you'll be able to see it. There is a big piece that fell off after God knows how many millennia, the rock cracked, and a piece, 20% of it maybe, fell off. It didn't crack down the middle. But this was on a very specific day that the Indians, the indigenous peoples, predicted that the rock was going to split. Am I correct?
Yes, there was a prophecy that was given. Going back a couple weeks before the event by a Native American chief, and they held their powwows there, And he said that if it split down the middle, that the Earth would be going into a great apocalypse. But if only a third of it would break off on the edge,
mm-hmm.
That on the right side where it was kind of there was kind of a loping effect,
mm-hmm.
that if that part were to fall off, that it was going to relieve the tectonic stresses under the Earth, and especially under California. And the apocalypse would be averted.
Hmm. Well, it did split off in that respect, and no apocalypse yet. Van Tassel wrote 6 books about his experiences, including I Rode in a Flying Saucer.
And yes, that was his first one in 1952.
Yeah.
So that even predated Adamski, whose first book came out in 1953. And it was one of the first flying saucer books to hit the market.
Most interesting. So George Van Tassel really started the whole thing, the modern era of ufology, as it were.
Yes, and the contactees.
Well, George Van Tassel was a very health-conscious man. He built this Integratron, which we're going to talk about in the next hour, and died February the 9th, 1978, of an apparent heart attack. But it shocked everybody that knew him because he was so healthy. And it's some suspicions there. The Integratron had an orgone accumulator, from Wilhelm Reich's knowledge, and the core and other critical components of the Integratron vanished right after Van Tassel's death. So why? Why would somebody go in there and steal it if it wasn't, in fact, perhaps what Van Tassel said? You know? He's just a kook.
Yes,
don't pay any attention to him. Do you know what the core, we got to run here, but do you know what the core part of it was like? What it was composed of? Do we know that?
Yes, it allegedly included Tesla technology, and it could do 2 things. It could, number one, assist in the process of human cellular rejuvenation, as well as accomplish many other functions necessary for the survival of humankind on this planet, such as time travel.
All right, very good. Let's pause on that note, Ray. It's our Valentine's program with Dr. Ray, and we're talking about George Van Tassel, Giant Rock, and much ahead. So stay with us.